You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When you hear the words post-traumatic stress disorder, the image of traumatized war veterans is probably the first thing that comes to mind. But ProPublica reporter Lois Beckett writes about PTSD affecting people who are not in the military in a recent article called Why Hospitals Are Failing Civilians Who Get PTSD. And I'm very pleased that it has brought Lois Beckett to our show today. Hello.
Great to be here.
Why aren't we hearing more about civilians with PTSD?
I think part of it is that the research demonstrating the full extent of PTSD in civilians is pretty recent. It's just been emerging over the past couple of years. But I think there's a lot of lack of information about mental health in general.
You wrote another article related for February 3rd, ProPublica, the PTSD crisis that's being ignored of Americans wounded in their own neighborhoods. And you write that Americans in violent neighborhoods are developing PTSD at rates similar to combat veterans. Do you think that's because PTSD rates among civilians are rising, or just that we're actually screening more civilians now and know what to look for?
Is it just that now is the first time that people are just starting to measure this in a systematic way?
What cities and neighborhoods did you look at?
So there's good research out of Los Angeles, Detroit, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., a lot of cities with high rates of violence. Researchers are starting to just go to primary care centers or hospitals and start screening people.
If you've gone through a traumatic experience, how likely is it that you'll get PTSD?
It depends on what the trauma is. It depends on your history. There's a range for different things. War veterans, people have been in Afghanistan, it's 11%, Iraq, 20%, Vietnam, 30%.
And PTSD has been taken more seriously for veterans since the Vietnam War. Has that attention led to better understanding of PTSD among civilians?
I think it's starting to. I think a lot of doctors and the general public are starting to know more, but I think even now people don't realize that civilians get PTSD too.
You normally write about big data and information privacy issues. What got you interested in looking at PTSD in civilians?
Earlier this last year, I wanted to start understanding gun violence better and trying to understand what we should be writing about gun violence and how to prevent it. So I talked to a lot of different people, from doctors to social workers, who were trying to prevent gun violence in different ways. Met a surgeon in San Francisco who said we were starting to screen for post-traumatic stress, and I was totally surprised.
Well, but not just from gun violence. People who are abused, there are all sorts of reasons one might get PTSD.
Absolutely. Everything from car crash to sexual assault.
But why aren't we diagnosing it more properly? What are some of the signs of or symptoms of PTSD, and how might you know that you might have it?
So there's sort of three main groups. One, you're going to be re-experiencing the trauma, so nightmares or flashbacks, obsessive thoughts about it. Two, you might have sort of hypervigilance, so that you're feeling always unsafe or as if your life is threatened, sort of stuck in fight or flight mode, even though you're in a totally safe space. And the third would be sort of emotional numbness, withdrawing from family, stuff like that.
Well, okay, let's say those things are happening to me and I go to a hospital or I go to my local doctor. Is my doctor likely to associate that with PTSD?
From the studies I've seen, like, people are not getting diagnosed. A lot of the studies have looked at primary care patients and just screened them in the waiting rooms, asking them if they'd had a traumatic event, looking for symptoms, and almost none of them had gotten a diagnosis.
That's because we look for them in people who've been in combat, but we just don't associate it with people who haven't?
Yeah, people are just not asking about traumatic events in the way that you're asking about other health issues.
Are there more resources and support available for veterans with PTSD than there are for civilians?
So obviously, resources for veterans has been a huge struggle, and a lot of advocacy over the past years has tried to get veterans better treatment. But, you know, there is a Department of Veterans Affairs. If you're talking about other people, no, there's no central organization looking at this saying, okay, how do we cover the gaps in care?
When a civilian is diagnosed with PTSD, what kind of care are they getting? Are they getting the treatment they need?
So right now, people aren't even getting diagnosed. We don't know a lot about what kind of care they're getting because, except for the small number of people who might go to a mental health clinician and actually try to get a diagnosis and get treatment, most people just have no idea they even have PTSD.
So you cite a study in your article that found that overall about 8% of Americans suffer from PTSD at some point in their lives. That's about 31 million people. But what you're saying to me would suggest that that might just be the tip of the iceberg.
Well, that's an estimate of how many people they think have post-traumatic stress. Doesn't mean that all those people are getting treatment.
And it sounds like a major health problem.
Definitely. And we don't have the resources to treat it.
Although I did say at some point in their life. So is PTSD something that we can recover from?
Yeah. Many people with the right kind of treatment can get better and stop experiencing those symptoms.
What kind of treatment will somebody get?
So the best evidence-based treatment is cognitive behavioral therapy, especially something called prolonged exposure. And it's just a short way in which someone can sit with a therapist over a number of weeks, sort of talk through the trauma and approach the things that they have trouble dealing with, have trouble remembering, and that will help them deal with it and confront the fears that they have.
How important is educating trauma victims about the signs that they should look for and what they might do?
It's tremendously important. I spoke to John Nanny, who's a Department of Veterans Affairs researcher who works at a trauma hospital in New Orleans. And he came to the trauma hospital trying to start a program to help people who've been victims of urban violence recover and make sure they stay out of violence, don't get involved again. And he said, if you don't educate people about PTSD symptoms, you know, and they're having these nightmares, their flashbacks, they're paranoid, they don't want to leave their house, people think that they are going crazy. And if you just educate them, they know that this is normal.
Are some people more predisposed to PTSD than others? For example, two members of a family who have experienced something similar. One seems to be very troubled. The other one is coping, even perhaps with a bit of difficulty.
There's a lot of different research going on about biological determinants of PTSD. We do know that having trauma in your childhood or having previous traumas will make you more vulnerable.
What do hospitals need so that they can screen for PTSD and provide treatment options?
So the screening is really simple. It's basically asking people a standardized set of questions about what symptoms are you having.
But you have to know to ask those questions.
Right, and you have to have someone there. You know, hospitals are really busy just every time making sure they touch every person. And then the really hard thing is once you have someone who is, you know, flagged for PTSD, you need someone who's going to help that connect that person to treatment. And that's where the time comes in. It's not a huge amount of time, one or two social workers, a psychiatrist, but that's a staff member that someone has to pay for.
So hospitals are reluctant to do this? Will we have to require them to do it because it's going to be an added expense?
So I actually surveyed 21 hospitals in the past couple of months, and I assumed that a lot of trauma surgeons might not be aware of PTSD. But what I actually found is that trauma surgeons were very aware that this was a serious issue for their patients, and they said the cost of the staffing was standing in the way. Even in some place like Chicago's Cook County Hospital, which sees thousands of violently injured patients, you know, they found that they did their own research, found 43% of people might be getting PTSD from gunshot wounds to car crashes.
43%?
They screened about 200 people, so a small
sample. That's almost like veterans.
Yeah, exactly. It's a huge amount. And they want to be doing systematic screening, and they aren't. And the hospital has given so far no institutional funding to have staff members to look at this.
My guest is Lois Beckett. Her article, Why Hospitals Are Failing Civilians Who Get PTSD, was published by ProPublica March 4th. Does the Affordable Care Act do anything to address this issue?
Not directly. I talk to a lot of doctors who hope that as more people get health insurance, there'll be more mental health resources for them. A lot of doctors said, you know, we know PTSD is out there and it's a big problem, but we're worried if we start screening patients and diagnosing them, and there are so few mental health resources, especially for patients without insurance. I mean, we have doctors who are afraid to screen for PTSD because they don't think their patients will actually get treatment.
Well, what happens if PTSD isn't treated?
So it's a lot of burden on the individual, on the family. You know, you have people who can't go back to work, suffering pain, afraid to leave their own houses, so paranoia. It also has a huge impact on the family. We know from veterans there's this higher risk of domestic violence, family conflict, even violence outside of the home. You know, this is just a lot of suffering for people, and it's definitely something that affects their families and their communities.
And you write about researchers at Drexel University who say that people with symptoms of PTSD may be more likely to carry a weapon in order to restore feelings of safety.
When we think about PTSD, you know, the first things you think about are those nightmares or flashbacks. Those are the things that we associate with veterans. But PTSD is something that's really physical as well. It's like your physical body feels like you're under attack in that, you know, hypervigilance, hyperarousal, even if you're totally safe. So you imagine someone who has some rational fears of getting attacked. They've been attacked before in their own neighborhoods. And then you put those PTSD symptoms on top of it so that, you know, maybe somebody pushes them and they feel like their lives are threatened. That's a really serious thing.
There have been several highly publicized cases of individuals with PTSD being involved in shootings. So is this a public safety issue?
We have researchers out of Grady Hospital in Atlanta and at Emory University. And that's basically the one study I could find. And they said, yeah, there's an association here between post-traumatic stress symptoms and violent crime.
Well, if you're in a high-crime area and you get PTSD, does that contribute to the cycle of violence in an area which already has a high crime rate?
The social workers and researchers I talked to said, you know, they think yes, but frankly, there hasn't been that much research on civilian PTSD. There's still so much that we don't know.
And then there's a whole matter of, at least in the military, of the stigma that has been connected to PTSD and mental health issues. Does that stigma occur among civilians as well?
It absolutely does, especially if you're looking at young men with violent injuries. Like, they really want to think of themselves as tough and be tough, and you know, they're not going to be admitting to having problems.
There has been a push in the past few years by psychologists and even former President George W. Bush to get the word disorder removed from PTSD and in an effort to help reduce the stigma and help those who are diagnosed face less employer discrimination. Did semantics matter here?
I mean, I think that's a tough question. It sort of depends on the context. Definitely, I talked to people who had been experiencing post-traumatic stress that liked calling it post-traumatic stress and not post-traumatic stress disorder. It mattered to them to feel like, you know, this was something that was normal that they were going through.
So from now on, should I be saying PTS?
I think it depends. I mean, it's also a really serious issue, and so you don't want to minimize that.
Last week, Los Angeles Times reporter Alan Zarembo wrote about a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that found that many soldiers had joined the military with significantly higher rates of PTSD and other hyperactivity disorders compared to the general population. What do you think that tells us about PTSD among civilians?
I mean, I think it's definitely true if you have post-traumatic stress, people who get it may have vulnerabilities in their past. So there are other things going on there. It's, you know, often not just one incident in your life that causes this. There's a lot of buildup.
Now, I'm assuming that there are people in our audience who suspect that somebody they know has PTSD, maybe even have it themselves, and did not serve in the military. And if you were one of those people, or you think you're one of those people, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Just last week, it was reported that singer Chris Brown had been diagnosed by a rehab facility as suffering from both bipolar disorder 2 and PTSD. Are they often linked?
No, I don't think that there's – I think a lot of times that PTSD is comorbid with depression. That's what you see more often.
Uh-huh. Well, depression, of course, is a component of PTSD, isn't it?
I think there's similarities, but they're separate disorders.
When something like this becomes public, do you think that that helps people understand a situation like this better?
I think it depends. I think military veterans, the awareness there has really helped civilians. I think when you get high-profile celebrities diagnosed with PTSD, people have very different feelings about that, and sometimes negative.
Is a listener wonders, can PTSD be passed from generation to generation?
I think when you're talking about communities where there are high levels of post-traumatic stress, what you are talking about is children being exposed to trauma. People really want to be good parents and are totally committed to their children. But if you have something like post-traumatic stress because of a trauma that you've experienced that was not your fault, you know, that's going to impede your parenting. That's going to impede your family. So absolutely, talking to researchers, they're worried that, you know, if people are traumatized and then their children are hurt, that makes a big difference.
You said that one of the big problems is getting funding for treatments and actually research as well. Are we hearing anything from politicians about this?
So far, no.
We have a call from a therapist, actually. Is it Gary from Westchester? Hello, you're on. Gary, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Leonard. The reason I'd like to just make a comment is because I completely agree with what your guest is saying. As a therapist myself, a clinical social worker, I've worked with many people who were who are, my wife is getting excited here because I'm on the radio, who are non-military people. And many of these people, because of my specialty, which was addiction, many of these people have substance abuse histories, they have domestic violence histories, they have abuse histories, and they easily qualify under, you know, the DSM criteria for being diagnosed with PTSD. And when treated with that type of approach, as your author said, cognitive behavioral therapy, and addressing those problems, these people improve based on, you know, the kind of treatment that normally would be reserved for military sufferers of that condition.
Okay, Gary, so let's back up a bit. Somebody comes to you, you spot the PTSD symptoms right away?
You know, you have to think differently than many, and I'm not, you know, putting anyone down here, but many people who work with addiction clients don't realize that when you ask certain questions, what you're uncovering is a history of very severe exposure to trauma in the past of someone who has substance abuse issues, usually involving domestic violence, growing up in a home where there was often emotional illness, chaotic kind of environment, family environment. And these people have a long history of impulsivity and emotional troubles themselves, which really can easily fit under the heading, the umbrella of PTSD and the DSM.
Lois?
Gary's making a really important point here with regard to substance abuse. So if you have somebody who's addicted to drugs or alcohol, you come in, they get clean, and they have post-traumatic stress, then as soon as they're off those substances, their post-traumatic stress is going to come back. And
because they've been self-medicating.
Well, exactly. They've been using substances to suppress trauma, which is totally common in civilians and soldiers. So if you don't deal with that underlying PTSD, they're going to get on the loop of addiction again because they're not being able to deal with those symptoms.
Let's take another call. Vinny from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Leonard. It's a wonderful program. The reason that I'm calling is concerning the World Trade Center event, which I would imagine would engender post-traumatic stress disorder in people. And a while ago, I thought I was down there. I was in a few blocks away. And a while ago, I thought, you know, maybe it would help if I talked to somebody and through the program that was set up. And what I found was that there were so many bureaucratic hurdles to talking to somebody that I just gave up. Now I'm fine, so that's not, you know, not an immediate problem for me. But sometimes you have these programs and they sound great, but they are not really sufficiently funded to do the job or really set up to do the job. And I think sometimes that the people who need the help most are the ones who are least likely to push their way through these various hurdles. So that's the point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you for calling. You want to add anything to that?
It's absolutely true for soldiers, for civilians. The point here is you want people to get connected to care as easily as possible, because when you're already having stigma, you want to lower the barrier for people to get treatment.
Lisa from Staten Island, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to chime in. I adopted two children out of the New York City foster care system 9 years ago. They're 13 and 15 now. And they were immediately diagnosed with PTSD, and I was interested listening to the show because I didn't realize it was such a problem. But I don't really understand if anything that was done for them since then was directly to address the PTSD. I mean, we're both teachers, and we did a lot of behavioral work in the home, and they're, you know, one is in an honors program in high school, the other one's in Catholic school, they're doing great, but I don't, you know, they went to counseling, you know, they saw a psychiatrist. I don't know what the, you know, therapy I maybe should have gotten for them right away for the PTSD was.
And a lot of kids who've been in foster, no, I won't say this is a lot of good foster care, but some children who've been in foster care in bad circumstances then start acting out, and it's very possible that it's because PTSD, undiagnosed, is a real problem for them.
Yeah, PTSD in children is something there's a lot of attention on, and the National Child Traumatic Stress Network does a lot of work with that. And I think there's actually maybe a little bit more awareness in children than there is in adults for civilians.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, thank you. I just wanted to comment that, you know, there were some problems I had with the New York City foster care, but that was one great thing that they did. They made that diagnosis right away.
That's thank you so much for calling us. Jonathan from Washington Heights. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. This is a very interesting program, and thank you for putting more attention on this important subject. I just wanted to say that about 25 years ago, I witnessed this horrible bus accident. I was overseas at the time. And then I completely forgot about it. And I only by looking at my diaries from the time did I realize that I'd actually seen this thing and seen these people lose their lives in this bus accident. And that it gave me this whole appreciation for really how strong the brain is. They could kind of take something that doesn't have any relevance and just completely wall it away.
That's often the sort of first stage of post-traumatic stress is that you suppress the memories, you put them away, and then later sometimes for people who have PTSD, they emerge in this way that interferes with your daily life. But sounds like maybe you just suppressed it.
Exactly.
Thank you for calling us. And we go now to Regina from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you for having this program. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I am the daughter of a Holocaust survivor. And along with my mother's milk, she gave me her fears that at any moment the Jews might be in trouble again, and I carry it with me.
And I would think that many of the people who are Holocaust survivors themselves suffered from PTSD.
Yeah, that's before that we had a diagnosis for PTSD, so yeah. We don't really know.
Well, PTSD, of course, we know has been around for a long time. We just had different names for it. Shell shock, I think it was World War One.
Exactly.
Battle fatigue was World War Two.
There's signs that Odysseus had PTSD in the Odyssey. It goes all the way back.
Regina, thank you so much for calling us. Have you been dealing with it? Have you gotten any treatment?
You know, my kids tell me, you know, don't be so scared, Mom. You know, but they're living in a land of peace. America's the land of promise, and they don't know what it is. And I see the fear and the pain that my mom has, and it's secondhand for me, and it's third hand for them.
Yeah.
So it disappears over the generations when you're living in a land of peace.
I had a schoolmate who told me that her mother would always, who was a Holocaust survivor, would always run across the street as soon as the light changed. And she'd say, Mom, you don't have to run. There's enough time. She said, well, if the Nazis didn't get me, some car isn't going to get me. And I'm sure that that's kind of what Regina was saying as well. Amy in Manhattan asks, what about civilians who've been in war zones? I would expect they'd be at least as susceptible to PTSD as soldiers. Many of them go through horrible things and have less agency than soldiers do.
I mean, if we're talking about civilian contractors or civilians in general.
Or reporters.
Yes, absolutely. It's an issue for everyone.
So PTSD can affect anybody who has experienced something traumatic.
Right.
Where do we stand now? What's been the response to these articles?
You know, I've heard from a lot of people who are really interested in this and want to have more attention put on it. But, you know, when you're talking about better care, it all comes down to the money. Who's going to fund this? The American College of Surgeons, which is an independent body that sets the standards for trauma hospitals, is going to release a new recommendation this spring that trauma hospitals start screening and helping patients with post-traumatic stress. So that's not a requirement, but we're going to wait and see what hospitals do once this, you know, very important body has put it out there that this is something that they should be thinking about.
Lois Beckett's articles on PTSD, March 4th, Why Hospitals Are Failing Civilians Who Get PTSD, in ProPublica. Before then, on February 3rd, The PTSD Crisis That's Being Ignored, Americans Wounded in Their Own Neighborhoods. Thank you so much for being on our show.
And thanks for talking about this.